So I guess the Wiggles is really when I really started getting much more involved in that. And for instance, the first Dorothy the Dinosaur song, I wrote the lyrics, and then Anthony's brother John had written a song and we put the lyrics to that song. Yes, exactly. I think if you do music for any length of time, you have to be driven by a passion for it, really.
Welcome to Songwriter Trysts. This is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. I'm singer-songwriter Ray Lee. Music saved my life, and I love talking with other artists about the power of songwriting and their journey to where they are today. This is a safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, all the great things that build an amazing song. Please support the podcast by subscribing, or you can buy us a coffee, all through the website songwritertrysts.com. Welcome to a Songwriter Trysts with my new friend, Murray Cook. How are you doing?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
I'm good. I bet you've had a million and one introductions done for you over the years, and I'm a big fan of letting the artist tell us who are you and where do you come from.
Sure. Well, I'm best known for my 20 years in the Wiggles. I was an original founding member of the Wiggles, and we took that from a little cottage industry sort of hobby band to the world. And so I've been very fortunate. I think we came up with something that really resonated with lots of people. Yeah, as I said, we were teachers and preschool teachers, and we just did an album of music for kids, and it took off, and there we are. And
then there you go.
Yeah. Well,
it's so many years later simple. Now there's a documentary out about the Wiggles and it overtook the world and that, you know, incredible journey. But I want to ask you about you. How did you get into music? Where did your inspiration for music start?
Yeah, well, I've been around a long time. I was born in 1960, and so I grew up, my early years were in that sort of amazing explosion of music, which I wasn't really that aware of, because, I mean, you know, the Beatles kind of hit when I was three or four. Uh-huh. And I grew up in the country, in country New South Wales. So,
which town are you from?
Originally from Cowra.
Okay.
And then when I was eight, we moved to Orange. Then when I was 16, we moved to Sydney. So all my family are in Sydney now. It was that sort of childhood where we just kind of ran pretty free in the holidays, and we seemed to just be playing outside or watching TV. And we did watch a lot of TV. And that's kind of where the music came from, because the Monkees TV show started, and I watched the Monkees and just thought, wow, this is amazing. It was, you know, four crazy guys living in a house all together and playing music and playing guitars. And, I guess guitars weren't really on my radar. And then suddenly I'm thinking, wow, look at that. That's so cool. Playing guitar must be the coolest thing. And that's, over 50 years ago. And I still think it's the coolest thing. Well, from there, I guess I got into the Beatles and the Stones and stuff like that. And then in the early 70s, we were living in Orange. And a lot of the sort of Australian bands would come through town, especially Sherbet. Younger view listeners might not remember Sherbet, but Daryl Braithwaite was the singer in Sherbet. And that was the first band I ever saw. And I was just, because I'm Australian, I started thinking, oh, okay, so as an Australian, I could do this maybe. I was like 13. And so I'd already pestered my parents to get me a guitar, and I'd already been playing a little bit. And I just got really obsessed and, just went and saw lots of bands, played music for years. When I moved to Sydney, I played a little bit in Orange with different people, but when I moved to Sydney, I made friends at school with some guys who played guitar, and we started a band in the late 70s when we finished. And it was a really kind of fruitful time for music in the late 70s into the 80s. There were gigs everywhere. And, you know, we weren't very good, but we got lots of gigs, and you kind of learnt your craft on the job and played lots of gigs. And I did that for many years, about 8 years. And I worked in a public service job as well, to keep me alive. Yeah. And the band did a couple of singles. We did a couple of singles for RCA, And they didn't go anywhere. And so we kind of all decided, oh, that's it. We gave that a go. And yeah. I thought, well, I should do something else. So I went to university to study early childhood education. And that's where, once I decided music wasn't going to be the thing for me, that was the sort of
So you gave up on it and then
And that was kind of the start of the path for me. And I met Anthony there and later Greg. And then we put the first Wiggles album together eventually. And
crazy.
Funny. Anthony had a similar thing where he decided he'd, because he was in the Cockroaches, who were a pretty big band in the 80s, but he decided he didn't want to tour anymore. He wanted to give that away. And then once the Wiggles took off, he toured more than anyone ever has.
I was going to say. That's kind of funny. You say you want to quit something and then, I'm a big believer that you should never really say what you don't want to do, because I feel like the universe has an awkward sense of humour where it kind of tends up to push you in that exact direction.
I think you're right. It's funny how those things work out. It could have gone either way. And the beauty of the Wiggles when we started is we weren't doing it to make a career of it. We didn't think there was a career in making music for children. There were a few people doing it, but there were no groups doing it. And in fact, we went to see an agent once, and she said, "Oh, you'll never make any money. There's too many of you." so she turned us down.
I feel like you get the same response these days as well. It's, everyone's going out solo because it's so hard to make a living. It's really harder when you're splitting it up between a group or a band.
The Wiggles are still in a pretty unique position that we're still, doing really well, financially. It's a big operation, but I don't perform with them usually, but I'm still involved. Yeah.
Can you mentioned about the 70s and the 80s? They were really big years for Australian music and entertainment.
Yeah.
And you've been in the industry for a long time. I've been in it for about 4 years, so I'm witnessing and I'm learning about the politics behind music just now. What do you think the biggest difference between our current cultural climate with music in Australia versus what it was like in the 70s, 80s? Is there a big thing that stands out for you that you go, that's massively changed?
Yeah, I think technology's had a lot to do with it, and the availability of different types of entertainment, just on a broad cultural level. When I was a teenager, even people who weren't that into music went out to see bands. That was kind of what you did on the weekend. And it was kind of since the late 50s, I guess, in sort of teen culture particularly, music was the central element. Like that was what, coolness was about music.
Like if you were cool.
And music culture had such a huge influence on and was central, I guess. That's what it was, really central to teen culture particularly and young people's culture.
That's where you go to hook up.
Was that too. Now it's kind of there are so many other things. There's video games, there's streaming, there's all sorts of things. People a lot of people don't go out as much, and if they do, they just go out for a drink. They don't sort of, but whereas we got the gig guide. Even that, one of the things I say is, we live in the information age, but if I want to see who's playing on the weekend, I've got to look at about 10 different websites. You got it in the paper or the street press, and you just looked it up and went, okay, I want to do that, did that, that. And I think those things have actually made it harder. Yeah. So I think that's a big part. Yeah, really, I think that's the single most thing. And laws and things like that have changed. I mean, it was kind of the Wild West back in the 70s and 80s, things like liquor laws and, they'd pack people in venues that, you would never get away with now. I'm obviously all for safety, but it has made it difficult. And there's, so many restrictions on venues and things like that. And then as we go on stream, there was much more income from music for most people with recorded music. Streaming is a way of getting to lots of people, but it doesn't really pay that well.
Diluted.
And I think also radio has changed a lot too for bands and solo acts. Radio used to play a lot of more Australian, in the heyday of like Midnight Oil and Cold Chisel and the Angels and all those sort of Oz rock bands. The radio played those acts and it wasn't, Triple J wasn't as sort of regimented. I remember I moved to Sydney just after Double J started, which was in the 70s, and and you could take a demo tape and give it to them and they'd play it and things like that. And it was just much looser, and I think that suits musicians better when you have access to those things and, so access to gigs, access to radio, and just a lot of that's gone by. And the 70s was also great, and what really spearheaded the whole revolution, I think, it was Countdown. When Countdown started in the early 70s, it really pushed Australian music into being like a proper business model, bands could go on Countdown and the whole country would see them, whereas it was much more regional before that. You could have a hit. A friend of mine was in a band and they had a number one hit in Hobart. Like, you could have a hit in different So they went and did a Tasmanian tour, and they played Hobart and the place was packed, and then they played Launceston, which is not that far away, and literally no one came.
That's so weird.
So it is really weird when you think about it. So things like Countdown changed all that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very disconnected. So Australia needed to come together, I guess, through some sort of unity of taste. Yeah.
And it was also that thing too that, if you lived in Brisbane or Adelaide or Perth, you had to move to Sydney or Melbourne to be successful, because that's where the music industry was. But now, with streaming and with Triple J being, for rock acts at least, you can just stay in the place that you lived in and there's a scene there. So.
Yeah, it's good to be able to connect and work with anyone all over the world. And like this podcast for me started during COVID. But I've made friends that I've only just met this year that we've met face to face, but it's like we feel like we know each other because we can do this online. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
So not the same.
It's not. And there's good and bad things, obviously. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm certainly not the old guy screaming at the cloud, saying, we should go back to the way things were. But there's good and bad about both, I think.
I feel like it. Someone explained to me yesterday, and I think it's a bit of the talk around technology as well, that that music has gone from being a commodity to like a utility. So it's like it's turned into being like electricity and water. It's something that we expect to have for free rather than it being something of value. And it's changed society's perception, and that, trying to think of ways that we can make music a commodity again is kind of the big challenge at the moment. So it's an interesting one.
That all that stuff, it's kind of meant that it has been devalued a bit. I think people don't take into account how much work goes into creating songs and recording. Obviously.
And touring and trial and error and learning the instrument.
And then all the boring bits behind the scene, if you're self-managed, having to book flights and hotels and all that stuff. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I have so much respect for anyone who's out there just doing it. This is a songwriting podcast, though. So tell me about the first song that you ever wrote and what your journey as a songwriter is and what you like about it and what's been the hardest thing about it. Yep.
I wrote a terrible song in my teens. I can't even remember what it was about. But I guess like a lot of
probably
writers,
about a girl.
Yeah. Or probably it was probably like because of the times there were lots of songs about how hard life on the road is. I'd never been on the road. I didn't know anything about it. And I think I just put myself off for quite a while. And then my bands in the 80s, my friend Mark wrote the songs, and he was so good that, I just kind of let him do it. Not let him do it. I just, didn't try. So I guess the Wiggles is really when I really started getting much more involved in that. And, for instance, the first Dorothy the Dinosaur song, I wrote the lyrics, and then Anthony's brother John had written a song and we put the lyrics to that song. And then so collaboration's really been my thing. I've written a few songs by myself, but I tend to write with other people. I like collaborating in lots of ways, but songwriting's one of them. And I don't know if it's sort of lack of confidence or I just work better bouncing off people. I don't think it's lack of confidence now, but yeah. So now my band, The Soul Movers, that I have, Lizzie Mack and I have been writing for close to 10 years together, and we've done 4 albums. And and I always say I'm the junior partner. So we have different ways. We have different ways of writing. But earlier on, we did a lot where I'd be just playing. I'd be just with her and I'd be playing some song, playing some chords and stuff, and just fiddling around. She'd say, "What was that? What's that?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. I was just making it up." And she'd start singing over it. And so we wrote quite a few like that. And then she's got a great sense of melody. She writes lyrics as well, but she'll often just sing into the phone and send me like lots of snippets. And it's like, some of it's just like compiling it and working out, you know, where it should go, and you know, is that a verse? Is that a chorus? And then you know, and so we'll get together and go, well, and I'll say, well, I think you know this bit should go like that, and it's piecing it together in a lot of ways, and I guess I've got much more of an idea of sort of more formal structure, like the structure of a pop song, I start with that, and then. Then we'll throw some of that out the window, and she'll sometimes go, I say, we've already got a bridge, we don't need another bridge to the song, and she'll go, yeah, but that'd it's really good, and then I just go, oh, okay, well, let's try it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, so I like that sort of thing, I like being able to do that, and she pushes me too, like, We got to get these songs written. We're doing this record. Blah blah blah. So sometimes
you're a real driver. That's good.
Yeah. So that works well with me too. So because I'm much more slow mover, where she wants things straight away. So I think that works well in the Wiggles too. Well, Anthony and I were like that in the Wiggles too a bit. Of course, Greg and Jeff were contributing too. But Anthony and I had done a lot of assignments at university together, and like those sort of group assignments, and so we were used to working with each other, and you know, he was that, like, all these ideas, and I'm like, no, we have to put them in some sort of, you know, order. So I'm more the sort of getting things in order guy, I guess.
That's awesome. I'm probably the opposite, but I'm married to the project manager, so
it is a
good balance. Yeah. It's hard.
Yeah.
You have to have some self-awareness.
Absolutely.
But if you can work together, I think it makes a beautiful match, not just in bands, but in life, in work, in corporate world. Have you read the book Surrounded by Idiots?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's a classic. I mean, it was number one last year. So have a listen read. But they also have different coloured personality types. Often you'll have two, but anyway, it essentially gets to the end of the book and it describes all the different personality types, and it says that to be a functioning society or company or group, you need to have all the different personalities because they all add value to any project. So it's interesting.
Self-awareness. Yeah, you do. And, sometimes it takes a little while for everyone to have, it's like everyone has to have self-awareness if you have one person who's not. But, fortunately the people I've worked with, if they didn't have it when we started, they grew to.
You've already jumped ahead to the Soul Movers, and I do want to ask you about that. But I also want to ask you about the early childhood education degree that you did or that you were doing before you started the Wiggles. What was it about early childhood and obviously then your massive career working with little children? What was the passion or driver behind that for you as a career path?
I guess I fell into it up to a point. excuse me. I've always got on well with kids. You know, I've always found them really interesting. They, you know, just the way they think, the way they talk, you know, the things they say, I always found really, really interesting. You know, any sort of family friends who had little kids, I always enjoyed their company and the way they looked at the world. And so I guess I was always, when I decided to do teaching, I was always going to teach. I actually thought I'd teach primary school. But then when I looked into what was available, I saw early childhood, and when I read about it, the philosophy of it really resonated with me. Yeah. They use a lot of art and music, but it's geared really differently from primary school or high school teaching, where so primary and high school is much more curriculum based, where there's a set curriculum you teach to that. Whereas with early childhood, it's based on observation. It's based on child development, so knowledge of child psychology and sort of various elements of development, and then observing the children and coming up with your own curriculum that actually suits individual children and the children as a group. Stuff that's you know, developmentally appropriate. And so when I read some of this, I thought, oh, that's really fascinating, and I can really imagine being involved in that. And I did like the idea of using art and music quite a lot. Yeah, so I went along it's interesting, and it hasn't changed. There's hardly any men in that field. There's at the institute that we went to, which is now part of Macquarie University, there was about 500 students, of which 5 were male.
Really?
Yeah.
1 in 100. So, that's crazy.
So when the Wiggles started taking off and we did it as a full-time thing, I used to joke with some of our lecturers who I kept in touch with that, you know, there's hardly any men, and we took like 3 out straight away.
But they always said, "No, their stats."
Well, they actually said, "No, what you're doing is really great because you're advocating for early childhood education and things." Because we always talked a lot about that and made it clear that, you know, part of what we're doing was hopefully educational. And so I guess that was part of the appeal. And I loved it. I was already 28 when I started, so I really wanted to learn. And
that's awesome.
Anthony and I both taught for 2 years after we left, and we were doing the Wiggles kind of – we were doing parties and playing at preschools and you know, in our spare time and in school holidays. And Greg was doing the course too, but he was 2 years behind us. So when he – by the time he got to the end – we decided let's give it a go as a full-time thing. And so we thought, let's give it a year, and at the end of the year we'll you know, get together and have a discussion about whether we'll continue with it. Uh-huh. And we never had that meeting.
Yeah,
it was quite obvious. Yeah, it was just obvious that we loved it. It was great fun. And it was, you know, even then it was financially better than teaching, which is still woefully underpaid.
Yeah, so, and that's it's not going to be hard, I guess, to try and beat that wage, unfortunately, when they are really developing our children's, you know, our future generations.
Yeah.
In the hands of underpaid people who
I know. It's kind of sad. I think so too. I mean, obviously I know a lot of teachers and, really dedicated people.
I come from a family of teachers, and my high school teacher when I was in high school said I should become a teacher. And I was like, no way. Yeah. Like, my grandmother was a teacher and a headmistress and did so much for the community, but I just I couldn't have done it.
Yeah. Well, when I first left school, I was going to do I was planning to be a high school teacher, and then I thought I remembered what it was
painful.
Student, I can't imagine doing that.
I have to agree with you, though. I think if I was going to work with kids like primary school age and that younger age, I've got 3 primary school age kids now. My oldest is going into high school next year, but it is just such a precious time. Like, they're so malleable. They look up to the adults around them. I just want to spend every second I can with them, and they want you there all the time. And I know that that's going to change at some point.
Yeah, it does change. Yeah.
They're going to want to have nothing to do with me, but
My son was a bit like that when he's in his teens, but my daughter was always, you know, pretty approachable. And
how did you find it being a traveling musician and having kids and that lifestyle balance?
Yeah, it was pretty difficult, actually, especially with the way the Wiggles toured. We toured 10 months of the year. Mm. The first 5 years or something, we would do 500 shows a year. Because we do multiple shows every day. Yeah. So I was on the road a lot. And so it was always difficult. We always, when the kids were little, they'd sometimes come out with us. But, you know, that got harder when they went to school. And the really big one was when we had success in America, because we were going over there for like six weeks at a time, three times a year. So I was away a lot. And, still a few times they came over in the early days. We'd get a car and we'd drive between shows. But the bigger it got, the harder that became, because the distances were longer and we were traveling so much more. So, but we did do one tour with a bus, because the Wiggles always travel in in buses when we did the big tours, the tour buses with bunks and lounges and everything like the rock and roll ones. Yeah. And there was one tour we did where the family came and we just got our own bus and the kids loved that.
Oh, they would have gone nuts for it.
Yeah, my son just stayed on the bus most of the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such a gimmick, isn't it? And kids love that sort of stuff. My kids would love that. Yeah. All right, tell me about the Soul Movers, because I've watched a couple of videos. I saw Dumb Luck, which I wanted to ask you about because it looks like you had a really good holiday. but tell me, like, where did the Soul Movers come from? What was the inspiration for that?
Lizzie, who's my writing partner in the band, was in a relationship with a guy called Dennis Tech, who some of the your older listeners might know, was in Radio Birdman, who were like a really formative sort of band in the punk era in Australia. So they were very, very influential. Anyway, he's a bit older than her, but they were a couple, and he heard her singing in the shower or something and didn't realise what a great voice she had, and said, we've got to do something. So they actually started the Soul Movers together and did one album. Then their relationship split up and so the band split up too. And I heard the album and I knew Lizzie a little bit, just from, cause we're both over 6 foot tall. And, we both would go small to gigs. Group. And so I'd see her in at a gig and just say, hi, there you go, tall person.
Over the heads of everyone else.
So when I heard her sing, I just thought, wow, she's got a great voice. And so I got in contact with her. We're friends on Facebook, I think, and just said, you know, do you want to do some music? And so we decided to use the Soul Movers name, and we kind of just went from there. And we did three albums for ABC Music because I had a relationship with them through the Wiggles, just started playing around and just around Sydney to begin with, and then sort of further afield. So, we don't tour like the Wiggles. We go away for the weekend sometimes. So we're in Adelaide a couple of weeks ago, which was our first trip there, but we've done everywhere basically except Northern Territory, I think.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm in a position where, you know, I could get some publicity because I had a name and you know, it was a kind of interesting story at first. Yeah, and it's still, you know, the Wiggles thing is still really great because we get quite a lot of young people come to the shows with a band of our age wouldn't normally. And they come to check us out and love the music, and the show's good fun. So, you know, it's there's a bit of interaction. I wasn't a Wiggle for 20 years for nothing.
yeah, fair enough. No, I'm sure you've got plenty of entertainment value in you. You know how to move on the stage.
But it's been really great, and you know, the band's called the Soul Movers, but and Lizzie's got a fair bit of soul in her voice, but we're not really a soul band. We did everything, and the idea of the name was always to move people's souls rather than to just make soul music. So so we've kind of not felt too hamstrung by the idea of just doing one type of music.
Yeah, no, I love that. And what are your goals with, I really like Dumb Luck, and I'd just been to Memphis for the first time, so I saw that you'd travelled to all these places and I was like, oh, that's so cool. What's been your goal, or like, is it just a bit of fun and you're getting out there and you're still getting to do music? You know, what do you want it to be?
It's a bit of both. You know, like, we don't have any illusions. You know, when you're an older act, it's, you're not going to break through to the mainstream in the same way as you might if you were in your 20s. Mm-hmm. We just want to get in front of audience. For me, it's about playing live mostly. I love playing live. That's my favourite thing in the world, just getting up on stage and doing shows. And, you know, sometimes people have said in different things I've done, wow, you know, you've played Madison Square Garden but you're here playing for 30 people in a pub.
But you're still doing what you love, right?
Absolutely. It's the same to me. It's like, obviously it's not exactly the same, but it's just as much fun. But But we still, you know, we still want to get our music out there. We want to grow our audience, and you know, it has been happening. We actually want to get much more on the sort of get a few more festivals and stuff. We love clan festivals. They're always great fun, and you get to meet lots of different people, and people see you who wouldn't normally see you.
And you get to see other artists as well. And
well, there's that, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's always
absolutely
a fun vibe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, seeing you the other night at the APRAs, that's one of the things I love about the APRAs. I always see lots of people I know, and, you know, you get together and have a little chat and what are you up to and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
well, yeah, I was only, like, invited in the last hour before I met you. So
right.
I was just down the road and I was like, oh, you got any spare seats? And they're like, yeah, come down. So it was nice, but I didn't actually expect to know anyone. But I knew a lot of people, which was actually really refreshing. So
it is nice. And there's a kind of sense of community. I think that's one of the things I like about those sort of get-togethers. There is a sense of community in the music business or music field.
Trauma and, bonding.
It's a bit of that. but also with the band, we're actually going to, just Lizzie and I are going to Canadian Music Week in Toronto in beginning of June. Yeah. Well, we actually applied to have the band go, but we didn't really hear back from them. So, but we figure if we go and meet some people, because I do have a bit of a profile there too, similarly to Australia, not as well known, but because the Wiggles were big in Canada, it's kind of a little bit of an in.
And so you've got to use what you got.
So we're just going to try to meet some people, maybe some agents, and see if we can book a little tour next year. So we've got an export grant. I think we talked about that. So we have an export grant over 2 years. So that'll help actually. It won't pay for it, but it'll help pay for it. Which is
I've just finished my 2 years. Well, the end of this financial year is the end of my 2 year export grant, which is why I was thinking of going to Canada. But because I've talked to a lot of people in Canada, but I haven't been. It's always a place I've always wanted to go. So
I love Canada. Come along.
Sure. let me just take all my money that I have. but it is. It's such a beautiful country over there, and I think it's a good thing to get out. Outside of Australia as well, because as much as we do have a really amazing country and there's patriotism and we want to support each other, I think there is a general desire that we want to support each other. It's a completely different environment getting into other English-speaking countries, America, Canada, UK, especially in the music industry, where I've noticed that they kind of want to support you and encourage you. And whether it's because you're from a different country or whether it's just the different atmosphere, I don't know if you found it different, but I've just had so much love when I've traveled overseas as a solo artist and maybe felt a little bit more accepted in other countries outside of my own. I think it's the tall poppy syndrome that we've got going around. It's this deadly disease that's killing us, but
I think there's also that thing that if you're in America and you say you're a singer, people assume that you're a professional singer. Whereas in Australia, people think, you just sing at the local pub
on karaoke,
Saturday night or something, unless you're really well known. I found America. So when we first went to America, we just saw it as an adventure. We didn't really think it was going to be successful, or we had no illusions or no. Real ambitions, I guess, because in those days it was all about videos for the Wiggles. We signed to a video company that had Barney the Purple Dinosaur, which was very big in America at the time, and they had a stage show. So they took us over, and we would do just four songs in the intermission of their stage show. And
that's so good.
We thought it was fantastic, and we did some little shows of our own. We played it at a Blockbuster car park. once in LA,
Blockbuster,
and there was literally three people there. Two of them were the publicist's kids.
you know you've made it when you've done gigs like that, though. Honestly,
yeah, and we loved it. We had great fun doing that, and it was a lot less work than when we sort of got successful and we had to tour properly. But we did things like we played. In the Barney show, they were doing Radio City Music Hall in New York, and they said, come along and play with us. We're going, yeah, sure. So we flew over especially to do a week at Radio City, which was great. So yeah, it was an adventure. But what I liked about America, especially compared to the UK, when we were talking to people about releasing stuff, in the UK they were much more, it might not work in our market. You know, we just don't know if it'll work. Whereas America, we're going, let's try it. Let's see if it will work.
They go get it,
really, they really were, and I like that. And Canada's kind of somewhere in between. Canada was kind of, we tacked on a little bit when we were going to the US, but it ended up being really good for us, and we loved going up there. And the Canadian people are much more like us, I think, than Americans are. They, you know, they've got the similar sense of humour and,
How did it feel going back as the Soul Movers?
Well, we haven't done it yet. That's coming up. So, it'll be interesting. I don't know. We'll see how we go.
Fingers crossed. I mean, I went to Chicago last year, and we went to some blues bands, and they love that sound, that sort of blues kind of rock vibes. You never know.
Well, we're going to go down to Chicago, and one of the other things we did a few years ago, which you might find interesting, we did an album in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And Memphis. So we did most of it in Muscle Shoals. We did South by Southwest. We kind of snuck our way into it the year before. So that was 2017, I think. I think we talked about that. And so we did a road trip afterwards. Just Lizzie and I did a road trip, and we went. I'd been through Muscle Shoals. So Muscle Shoals is there's Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, and a lot of great soul music came out of there. So Aretha Franklin recorded there. Wilson Pickett did, Mustang Sally and all those things.
And
a lot of the musicians. So we went to just have a look at the studios. And when we were there, just hanging, there was someone recording in Muscle Shoals in the studio, so we couldn't go in. But we just kind of hung around outside just for a little while. And this guy, an older guy, came out and started talking to Lizzie. She was just sort of near the back door of the studio. And then I was at the car, and she brought him over, and he had his grandkids loved the Wiggles, so he wanted to come and meet me. Oh. So this guy comes over and he introduces himself, and he says, my name's Gene Chrisman. And I'm thinking, I know that name. And he's a session guy who played on Suspicious Minds by Elvis, all that Memphis stuff, that late 60s, Suspicious Minds, In the Ghetto, Kentucky Rain. He played on Dusty in Memphis, so he played on Son of a Preacher. And I'm just like, oh, my God.
That's the theme tune to my life.
So amazing. He was recording with Dan Auerbach, who's in the Black Keys. He was doing a solo album. So I'll come and meet Dan. And we went in, some of the musicians were there. One of the musicians playing bass is David Hood, who played on like all these amazing soul records. Dan, we're talking to them, and Dan Auerbach says, so what are you thinking of coming to record here? And Lizzie and I looked at each other like, well, we weren't, but maybe we could.
We are now.
And so she organised a lot of it, and the next year we went back and we recorded there and at Fame, which is the original studios in Muscle Shoals, and then we also went to Muscle Shoals sound. The Stones did Brown Sugar there. It's this kind of thing.
Like iconic.
Yeah, and so we played with some of the musicians as well. Spooner Oldham, who's a really amazing guy, and then we also went to Memphis and we recorded a song at a studio called Royal Studios, which is Al Green did all his stuff in the 70s there. And then we also went to Sun and did a song at Sun Studios, obviously Elvis came from. So it was one of those amazing things. And so it's kept us in stories on stage for a while too.
That's so cool.
You know, when we're introducing the song, here's the song we did, blah, blah, blah.
It's a part of the story, isn't it? And, like, some people want that attachment or connection to history, and I think it's absolutely beautiful.
I really love that. I'm a music nerd as well. So, it was the adventure of it, and I see music as an adventure, and if you can make a living from it as well, that's obviously a bonus. But just the life experience is
find a way.
What it's about, yeah.
My parents were missionaries, and they travelled the world on $10, preaching the gospel. And obviously, I told myself I would never do that because I didn't want to be a poor pastor travelling the world. But I loved what they had passion, and they wanted to help people. And in that sense, I have passion and I want to help people. And I have travelled the world on very little money, but lived on the generosity of other people letting me sleep on their couch or in their spare room paying for my flights or, giving me breakfast when I'm living on bread and toast. But you do funny things like that when you're passionate and you want to you feel like you've got something to do and you're willing to give up hot food for that for a little while.
Yes, exactly. I think if you do music for any length of time, you have to be driven by a passion for it, really. You know, we're touring all the time, it was difficult with family.
Yes, and I've had sort of rules around not leaving the family for more than 6 weeks at a time, and actually the few times I've gone to the States, it's only been for 2-3 weeks max. And my daughter for the first time a few weeks ago said, "Mommy, I don't like it when you go away." And it's like,
okay. Breaks your heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
When my son was younger, he said, "I don't like music." And my wife said, "What? Why?" And he said, "Because it takes daddy away." I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
So heartbreaking. Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. And kids do want their parents around. And it's interesting. Like, we all have our own journeys to go, and we all attach different things to certain things. And obviously, that's, you know, that was his attachment. But hopefully, it's not like that anymore. And
no, it's not. And, you know, like, both my kids are appreciative that what I did was a sacrifice as well. You know, sure, I love doing it, but, you know, it was hard for me too. I didn't like being away from them either, but, you know, if you have success in music too, you've got to follow it, you know, because it's not necessarily going to last forever, and you just got to make the most of it.
But finding balance, it's not just something that is, you know, the music industry. It's finding balance in life is a daily chore for everyone in life. And
absolutely,
we have to make choices, and we are responsible for our own lives. And
it's
a hard one. I've actually been working, and that's when I met you, I was actually talking to Karen from APRA, and we were talking about being a mother in the music industry, and as well as ageism and discrimination towards not just women but mothers in the industry. It's been a real big hot topic at the moment, because I know so many women who are my age who have chosen not to have children because they feel like they've been told that essentially they have to give up music and they have to give up who they are because they want to have kids. And it's like, that's just not a fair choice that they have to make. It's not even real. Like, no one's actually telling you have to make that choice. And I don't know if anyone ever told you had to make that choice between your kids and your music.
No, and that's the sexism of it, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, it's only really women they ever say that to, but, you know, why is it any different? You know, it shouldn't be. Yeah, so, I was very fortunate, I'm sure you are too, that, I had a very supportive partner, and she could see, well, you know, she could see that. And even now, you know, with what I do, she's really supportive. I'm, you know, because it's a mental health thing as well. My mental health is much better when I'm making music.
That's 100%.
She sees that too.
I got retired, medically retired from my full-time work for mental health reasons. And music is the only thing that's kind of kept me going.
It's so powerful. Yeah,
it's incredible. And I think if it's who you are, like, it took me 30 years to realize that being a singer-songwriter was who I am, and that it was a gift. Whereas, you know, when something is naturally a part of who you are, you think everyone can do it, right? I don't know. I was just like, everyone can sing a song. Everyone can write a song. Everyone could play an instrument. Everyone can sing. I was just naive to that. And the day that I realized, and this is after like 10 years of therapy, the day after I realized that not everyone can do it, music is incredibly powerful and it's a gift, and it's a gift that really, I think, should be shared. All of a sudden I had this just overwhelming sense of responsibility of, oh my goodness, I have to share this, like what it's done for me. And I've been sitting here selfishly singing in my bedroom by myself, never letting anyone ever see what I have. And I didn't think I could sing because I'd never heard anyone who sounded like me on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then and I had some bad influences when I was younger who told me not to sing. So, and then my dad was on the cliffs of North Stradbroke Island one day, and he just said, you know, you have the voice that God gave you, and it's exactly the voice you're meant to have. And it just was so freeing to be able to go, do you know what? Yeah, I am who I am, and it's who I'm meant to be. And all the comparison and all that other stuff just goes away.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
Worrying about being a mother. And I've got friends in the industry who are older as well, like yourself, who have had success, but going up in the career, it's like ageism is a massive issue in the industry.
Yeah, it's huge. That's the thing with, especially starting a new band. It's funny because there's a real, there's a circuit for bands who are successful and are still going around and they put out new records that they know that the radio player played them and stuff, which is ridiculous because, I mean, people who listen to oldies radio will probably listen to Ross Wilson's new song or, you know, Russell Morris's or whoever, you know. And so it's kind of funny from because going into what's perceived as a different field because I was, in the kids' music thing and now I'm in the music for adults. It's taken a little while to make any sort of breakthrough. And we're up against it quite often, and people are surprised when there's young people at our shows. Because I find young people are actually much more accepting of older acts.
Absolutely.
Than older people think. So
I know. Yeah.
Look, I don't let it worry me too much. But it definitely is a thing, and it's I think it needs to be broken down.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that it's not necessarily that it's being said, but it's being shown by the people who are curating for festivals. And the radio, like what's being played.
Yeah.
It is. It's really heartbreaking and.
I think sometimes it is being said. I've heard of even women in their 20s being told, "Oh, you're too old."
And and Australian Idol don't take anyone over the age of 28. You know, like there's definite ageism happening, and it's totally accepted behaviour. And festivals, will have one token female, maybe.
I know it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous,
and it's never a headline. And it can come down to quality. But if they're not getting the financial support and they're not getting that help, then it's never going to be there. Or accessibility, no man's ever wondering, no one's ever asking them where their kids are and who's taking care of them.
Exactly.
But that's something that I have to combat every time I do anything. Who's got the kids today? My husband, their dad. He travels for work all the time too. So we often, like last year, we high-fived at the airport twice. We were your turn. And that's what we do. We support each other. It's an interesting one, but it's not fair. Because you have as much talent no matter how old you are.
Yeah, and it's very entrenched, the misogynism as well, is so entrenched and people don't even realise they're doing it sometimes, If you call them out on it, they're like, oh, I, no. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you see these festival lineups that come up. As you said, you see these festival lineups and it's like, where's the woman? Or there's one there. it's crazy because female artists are popular. It's not like,
they just don't think that we're going to be able to sell the tickets. I've actually my acting coaches and directors often they think I'm a guy because my name's Ray. I'm surprised I haven't had more just because people go, that's a guy, right? She'll be good. He'll be good. they'd be surprised if I rocked up looking like I do. they're like, oh, whoops, but no, that's okay. Yeah. It is. It's an interesting one that I think as long as we continue to talk about it. And we continue to show up and present really good quality professional materials as women or as older people or whatever it is. There's always going to be an audience out there and you can never control who's going to be a fan of what you do. And it's always random and we get all these numbers thrown at us. But I create adult music and I have this demographic of preteen girls between 8 and 12 that love my music. And I'm like,
that's great.
Makes me change the way I want to perform because all of a sudden maybe some of these topics I wouldn't think were age appropriate. They want to be older women though, don't they? Like that age bracket, they're all dreaming about what they're going to be like when they're older and hopefully you inspire.
It's interesting even when nearly every time we do a show where there's younger people there, lots of them come up to Lizzie afterwards and go, oh, you're amazing and it's kind of unspoken, but they're saying, well, you're an older woman and you're doing what you're doing. It's so inspiring. And it's great. I know she really loves that and I do too. I think it's really, really great. And she's talked about too when she was young, she grew up sort of more in the 70s and she said there just weren't that many women in bands. Like she didn't that's why she didn't, she's always loved music, but she wasn't really in bands when she was younger, because she said there weren't many role models. There are a few, but not that many, not doing the sort of music she liked. And I think things are changing. No. I mean, it is changing. And you know, through the 80s and 90s, you know, you had Chrissie Amphlett from the Divinyls was a, and quite a few in the 90s too. So, you know, it's changing. And actually in Japan, I was in Japan a couple of weeks ago I went and saw some bands. And like one night I went to, there were three bands on and two of them were all women.
Yes.
And there's lots of just all-girl bands. It's so great.
They're so good. I love Japan. I was there last year as well, and it's just such a beautiful country. I just want to get back there. I want to ask you, so one piece of advice after all your years of experience in the industry in different areas, what would you say is the one thing that you really wish you had have known earlier that is just such a pivotal piece of advice for people in the industry?
I think that it's two parts. One is fairly obvious, but follow your passion. You know, if you're passionate about it, stick with it. But I think it's also stick to your guns. If you know who you are as an artist, you know yourself better than anyone else does. You know, sure, take advice, be guided, but if someone's, you know, trying to push you into a direction that you don't feel comfortable with and you don't think is you, I would avoid that. That one of the things we found with the Wiggles, early on, we had a TV producer who wanted to change what we did, and he said, get rid of Dorothy the Dinosaur, and you know, and they didn't want us to speak to camera and stuff, and that's one of the things we knew we did really well. And we actually did a little pilot, and it was so awful. We just said, no, we'd rather not be on TV than go down that route. And it was like a really good decision. And so I guess, yeah, just learning that to stick to your guns, and you know yourself better than anyone else does. It can take a while to learn it, and also, you know, it is finding that balance between listening to people's advice and being told what to do. It's slightly different, I think, but it's difficult, especially I think when you're starting out. You know, you're as you say, you're in the studio. It's not a familiar environment.
You're impressionable, and I think that's for me. It's about learning what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah, I guess with the Wiggles, by the time we got to that point where, you know, people were telling us what to do and we were rejecting them, we'd already been around for a while and in various forms, and we'd had a bit of experience, so it's a lot easier. But you know, if you can keep that in mind and work towards it as much as you can, I think.
No, I love that. That's really good advice. And if you could collaborate with one person anywhere in the world, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Well, I'm a huge Beatles nut, so Paul McCartney.
Come on, Paul. I want to have a chat with him. That would be so cool. I mean, he's done a few podcasts, but
amazing. Yeah. Well, a friend of mine. Do you know Sean Sennett?
No.
He's a Brisbane guy. He does podcasts. He used to have Time Out magazine. Okay. Anyway, Sean's interviewed him a few times, and so much so that Paul remembers him. So the next time he asks him about personal things and stuff.
Oh, you know, that's so nice.
It's like Sean got married, and Sean was getting married when he interviewed him one time, and the next time he saw him, he said, how was the wedding? Paul McCartney's asking me about my wedding. So, yeah, I think he's a pretty good guy. So, yeah, but I mean, you're like, he's a genius, but I would be so overwhelmed if I did that. So I'd probably be better off with someone else who I didn't idolise quite so much.
I've had that a few times. People are like, I'd love to work with Taylor Swift, but I probably also couldn't speak in her presence.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there anything else you would like to share? I'm going to put all the links to your new music and, you know, who you are, so people can follow you on socials and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so people will be able to contact you if they want to. But is there anything else you'd like to share before we finish up?
No, just so I think music's been such a great life for me, and I feel very blessed that I've been able to have this opportunity. And you know, it's a combination of luck, a good product, and determination and passion, I think. And if you've got those things, you know, luck's probably the hardest one for the, you know, being in the right place at the right time. But you know, I think it's even if you don't scale the heights that you'd like to. It's just such a great life and a great experience, and I can recommend it to anyone who's thinking of it who feels that they have the passion.
I love it. Yeah, I've definitely heard someone say be in the right place at the right time. So if you know where the right place is, be there all the time.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
yeah. And I think it's just showing up, isn't it? Like you're not going to get much done by sitting around at home. And
well, I've also heard people say that sticking around and just sticking at it, like some acts have just were around for years before they found success, and just stick with it. It's fun while I think don't get caught up too much in wanting to make it, in inverted commas, because it's hard to say what making it actually is. And sometimes I think people get to a certain level and it's not as satisfying as they think. And the actual, it's a bit of a cliche, but the journey is really important, I think.
I think you got to enjoy the journey. I'm definitely a big lover of just creating. I'm going through that release cycle where you're promoting it.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part for me. I just want to be making and then doing the shows and then like making more and then doing, and then when I'm not doing that, that's when like the depression hits, like that low, like, oh, now what do I do?
I can see that.
But I know because I love that part that I'm just going to be able to do it forever. Like this is my retirement job. So
me too.
I was medically retired from the corporate world, and so now this is all I'm allowed to do. So when people try to say you can't do it, I feel like, oh, well, I'm sticking around anyway, like a bad smell.
I've got no choice.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Lovely. All right, well, if you're ever in the Gold Coast, let me know. We'll come watch you.
Yep, we'll do.
Good. Okay. Right. See ya. Bye. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guest, please go to the website songwritertrists.com.